You can download those lectures. They're in a WAVE format. There's probably even a way to get it into your iPod. I haven't figured that out yet. And iPhone, but any kind of media player, you'll be able to listen to them. You can burn it to a CD if anybody has CDs still, or your MP3 player and listen to the lectures over and over and over again, which is pretty good because a lot of people learn by writing notes, by taking notes. And it's really helpful for some students to rewrite their notes after the lecture is over. So if you need to fill in something in your notes because you just missed it in class, you can always go to the audio recording, okay, and work that over once again. So that's good repetition. And as you know, because you've passed anatomy, repetition really is the key to learning new information. All right, but SI is really helpful too because you work with the information just in a little bit different way, and that will help your knowledge. And I think that's why a hybrid class is helpful, because there's interactive exercises in Blackboard, drag and drop, things like that, and there's good practice quizzes and exams, and that will help your working knowledge of the material as well. All right, so the people that need to add the class, you're welcome to stay in class today, but sooner or later, right after Thursday, we won't allow you to be in class. All right, so you got to find a spot in lab, and I think you have a pretty good chance of getting into the class if you need to add. Okay, so don't be shy. Make sure you show up to lab, whether you're registered or not. Well, you probably saw me log into Blackboard. We see on the right-hand slide over here, and showing up in this frame way over on the right are the classes that have content that you've registered for in Blackboard. And you probably won't be taking as many classes as I am. Okay, you might have just one class in here, maybe two or three. And somebody's, oh, that's not quite the right one. Let's see, where's it? Wow, I thought I was at the bottom. I wasn't. Okay, here is 805. So it's really helpful, as you can see, when you send me an email, just don't say what class you're in. Tell me the section number as well. I need to know the CRN, because in that list of classes that we just flipped through, there's no way that I can find you, right? So in the subject line, put your name, the class number, and the CRN, and then I can zoom in and help you right away. All right, so you come to a page in Blackboard that looks like this. This is the announcements page. So I might put some announcements here. I think you'll get an email too when I put an announcement, so you can go and check. And I just dump the welcome letter in here. Right, but you have a hard copy. I gave that to you as an email already. And basically, this welcome letter tells you how to log into Blackboard. So it's kind of silly I put it in there, because if you didn't know how to log into Blackboard, then you couldn't even find the welcome letter here. But I just put it in there. But there is something important, and I didn't know the URL for Blackboard. Here it is in the welcome letter. And that you should bookmark. Okay, and if somebody has taken a hybrid or an online class at Cypress College last semester, even fall, just a couple weeks ago, the log on page, the URL for Blackboard has changed. So if you have bookmarked it last semester and click on that bookmark, it won't take you to the current Blackboard site. Okay, so use this link right here to go to the server over at the district. There are links to Blackboard in my gateway and maybe in other locations in the Cypress College website, and they have not been updated yet, so they will take you to the old URL. All right, so make sure you get this one right here. And there's also a redirect URL that some instructors are passing out to their students, which resides on the Cypress server and resides on the Cypress College website. But if the Cypress College website ever goes down, then that link is not available to you, even though Blackboard is working fine on its resident server over at the district. So you just might as well go directly to where Blackboard actually exists. Copy this one down. All right, so that's probably a big reason why I put that in there. Okay, we just got done talking about supplemental instruction. So look in the left-hand frame. Here's the button for supplemental instruction. And Brian, I'm going to put your name in here, right? Crystal Mendoza's not with us anymore. And so that email address isn't going to work. So I'll update it soon. And if I forget to do it, you can always remind me. You can send me an email or something like that. Okay, the syllabus is here, course information. I don't know what's in course information. Let's take a look. Okay, well, I dumped the welcome letter, syllabus, and weekly study plan, and then some plugins, some links for plugins that you might need. And here's a really nice internet connection test. Remember, that's a requirement of the class to have a reliable computer with internet connection, and you can check your internet connection. And when you do, jot down your benchmarks on how it is working, and then take the take a quiz and get some extra credit points for that. All right, so that's always going to tell you how your computer is working. All right, so requirement of the class is a high-speed internet connection. High speed was defined years ago as 768 kilobits per second, and I'm sure all of you right now are way up in the megabits, all right, maybe even 20 or 30 megabits per second. I'm sure everybody has a high-speed internet connection. Now, unless you have a telephone modem. Anybody have a telephone modem? Okay, lucky you. Okay, that's not high speed. So you probably need to go someplace like the library has computers and various other parts on campus, right? Okay. That because there's video files and large files that would just take too long with that bandwidth right there. Okay, this DVX audio player, since there are videos for you to watch, sometimes the Windows Media Player doesn't work very well. And so I've downloaded the DVX player. And it has always worked. The Windows Media Player sometimes will play the audio portion of the file, but not show you the graphic portion. And sometimes it will show you the graphic portion, but it will forget to play the audio side. So you can either listen to it but not see it, or see it and not listen to it. Neither of those is very satisfying. So this DVX player has always worked. Okay, and that's a pretty modern player. There's even a more modern player. I think it's called TLC, probably maybe even something more modern than that. You guys could tell me in lab sometimes. But here are some links. You'll need maybe to download the Microsoft PowerPoints and print them out. Here is a free PowerPoint viewer. You can't manipulate it. You can't edit the slides that I will give you within the viewer, but at least you can print them out. You can see them and print them out with the viewer. And of course, everybody should have an Acrobat reader. Oh, look, I have a broken link right here. It's not really broken. It's just the graphic is gone. Okay, what else about Blackboard? Pre-lecture reading assignments. I would like for you to do these pre-lecture reading assignments before when? Yes, before lecture, right? So download these. Here's chapter one. It would be really nice if you have done this assignment before today's lecture, because I might be using some terminology that you haven't heard before, and that part of the lecture then just would go right over your head, right? But if you do the pre-lecture reading assignment first, then you'll know that terminology or be a little familiar with it, so when I use it in lecture, you can incorporate some of that information, right? So it's just a nice repetition. You don't have to turn this in. It's not for course points, but it kind of works some magic because you start learning the material right away before you even hear lecture, so it's very helpful. Okay, and then in the same folder, you can show me your pre-lecture reading assignment and I can grade it for you and we can talk about it and go over it. But that's not absolutely necessary because also, okay, right under here is another folder. Here are the answer keys. And I can't remember if I programmed them to open up or if they're all available at the moment. I need to go take a look. Ooh, they're all available. I forgot to program them to open up. But do your pre-lecture reading assignment first. Just don't copy these answers down, okay? Because, I don't know, you could pretend you're reading something, right? Some other language in a textbook, but if you don't know what's going on, then it's a waste of time. Okay, so there are some answer keys. So you want to check those answer keys out. You might put a correct answer down for the pre-lecture reading assignment or partially correct answer. But since I'm the person that makes the test, you're probably interested in exactly how I'm thinking, right? So I can give you the exact feedback that you need. Okay, so check these answer keys out. Okay, and let's see what else we want to talk about. Probably not too much, but I do want to get a copy of the syllabus. So you can who knows how to download a file? Here's a file, it's a PDF file. And it's an executable link because you can see that the cursor changes to a hand with a pointy index finger. Okay, so I can click it with the normal clicking the left-hand mouse button and it will open up the file. But there's probably a more convenient way for you to do this the first time, because I think it's good for you to download the syllabus and save it on your hard drive someplace or in your phone. So so that you don't have to have internet connection every time you want to see it. And you do that by right-clicking the right-hand mouse over here. All right, and then save target as, or save link as, or something like that. And it's going to then ask me where I want to save it. Where should we put this? And one of Dr. Ogoshi's files, just to mess him up a little bit. Nah, let's put it in mine so I can find it again. Okay, I'll just dump it right here. I have no idea what I just agreed to, but it's probably all good. Okay. All right, well, I'm just going to open this up in a new window. Here are some important links that you should know. This is the correct link for the faculty webpage. This is where my lectures are going to reside, the audio files right here. There's a button in Blackboard that you can use to get there. Here are some interactive exercises that I built up at Long Beach City College. And then here is the redirect login for Blackboard. This resides on the Cypress College server. But if there's something happening with the Cypress College server, then this link won't work. So you might want to use the NOCCCD link directly to get there. A lot of good information. This is what you have to have for lab. These two books right here, or I will drop you, right? So make sure you bring these materials to lab along with your weekly study guide. Okay. Yes?
I need two lab books.
One lab book. You need the textbook, which is this one right here, and the lab book, which is right here. So that's one, and that one right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's good, and that's good. Yeah.
I have one at home. I brought my lab manual.
Oh, you could talk to me before lab. Show me your lab book. Okay. And I might ask you why you didn't read the email or something like that, and just tell me. Oh, I know. I didn't do it last semester. And here's my goal with this class. I want 100% of the students that register for this class to pass this class with at least a C. Okay? And to do that, you have to have your course material. So I'm forcing everybody right off the bat to get started with the class and be serious with it. Okay? And the PowerPoint slides and that kind of thing. So I'm willing to work really hard, but you know, you have to reciprocate too. Okay? And I'm sure since you all have been through anatomy, you have some study techniques already, you are good students. We just have to make sure that you're focusing on the right material. And in Blackboard, I have study guides for the exams, which define what pages in what chapters you have to read and be prepared for each particular exam. Some of you might know that I like to have a graphics part in this class. I like to have a large visual section of the class, and so I have exam figures that you have to memorize in Blackboard. Not that you have to draw these figures out, but you have to know how to label them. And sometimes it's a little bit different compared to anatomy because you're not labeling structures. You'll be using concepts to label these flow diagrams, and so that's a little bit different than anatomy, but anatomy will help you with that. Okay, what else? Okay, just a lot of stuff that you can read through. If you haven't taken an online or hybrid class with me before, you do earn course points by doing some online activities. And there's a whole bunch of other activities online that you don't get course points for. So you should do those anyway. Right? But for sure, you always want to do the activities that you get course points for and submit them by the deadline. And it might be confusing when you go online to find out what activities you have to do and which ones are not exactly compulsory. And so what I did is I made an icon right here, this dollar sign. Anytime you see a web page in Blackboard with a dollar sign, that's a key that you have to do that assignment for course points, and there is a deadline. And all of those assignments you can do an unlimited number of times, an online quiz, an unlimited number of times before the deadline. But guess what? What about after the deadline? Zero times after the deadline. Even if you have a really good reason why, like your internet connection just went down because a thunderstorm rolled through on Thursday afternoon, right? So that's not an excuse. So don't procrastinate and get these online assignments in early, right? Because I just can't reprogram all these Blackboard sites. So these assignments will always be due on a Thursday evening at 11 p.m. Okay, and usually there's about one a week that you have to do, so just be prepared to get it done by Thursday, or you'll miss those course points. And as a matter of fact, it's not that you'll miss them, you'll actually get a zero for them. So that will be tough to average out a bunch of zeros. So make sure you do the online assignments. Don't be late with those. And there's a really easy way to make sure that you don't forget a deadline or miss a deadline. Okay, and anybody have an idea what's a really easy way so that you never miss a deadline? Yeah. Yes, excellent, because I have more than 1 week of assignments opened up. I have like 4 or 5 weeks of assignments opened up. So you could do all those 5 assignments this week, all right, so that if you forget about it next week, then you don't miss the course points for next week, right? So just stay 1 week ahead and you have plenty of breathing room, right? So there's really no reason why you should ever miss a quiz in here. All right, I know Thursday is coming up really fast this week. And so your first online assignment is not due this Thursday, but it's going to be due next Thursday. But I also have an assignment due for next week. So you have 2 assignments to do next week by Thursday at 11 p.m. All right, so look at week number 1 and week number 2. I thought I'd give you a little breathing room for week number 1 because it's such a short week. Yeah?
You mean, so it says Friday.
Whoa, that's bad. Where does it say Friday? I missed it. Yeah, too bad I didn't catch that. But it is Thursday. It's going to be Thursday every time. And see me after class. Make sure I see where that is. All right, because I need to get that out of the welcome letter or syllabus or wherever it is, wherever it's residing. Okay, that's some wrong information. Page 4. Okay, I don't want to take care of it right now, but thanks for telling me. Okay, so your grade, you're probably interested in your grade. How are you going to get a grade in here? The first thing is that you should take a college-level chemistry class before physiology. Okay, so that is my recommendation. That's not a requirement at this college, but it is at most colleges. So chemistry is fundamental to physiology. You can't really understand physiology without some kind of chemistry understanding. So it's a good idea to get college chemistry under your belt. And if you get into a professional program, they're going to require it sometime anyway. And it will help you the most if you take it before physiology, not after. Physiology might help you a little bit in chemistry, but not nearly as much as the other way around. So chemistry is fundamental to physiology. If you're a physiologist, right, you can't understand your topic unless you know chemistry. But if you're a chemist, it doesn't help you at all if you know physiology. Right, so physiology doesn't help you with chemistry, but the other way works really, really well. Okay, getting back to grading. Lab quizzes, every week you're going to have a lab quiz, and that's going to be developed by your lab instructor. They will give you some guidance on what to study for the lab quizzes. Probably it's going to cover something that you did in lab or some discussions you had in lab. And then you have weekly online assignments. Okay, and that's always going to be symbolized with this dollar sign, so you can see it standing out on a web page. And there's going to be another icon. There are 2 extra credit quizzes that have an icon, this bell right here. That's actually a stamp. Anybody know what kind of stamp that is? That's a forever stamp. That's right. So these quizzes here will never close. They'll be available to you the whole semester, so you can take these quizzes to find out if your internet connection is working or not working. And then your highest grade is going to be stored in Blackboard, whatever that is. All right, so this is just a nice check to make sure your computer is working, your internet connection is working, and you can answer some questions about the syllabus or what the speed of your internet is, things of that nature. So it's just a nice check. And lecture exams. We're going to have 4 on-campus lecture exams. Pretty much every 25% of the class, we're going to take a break from lecture and have an exam in here. They're going to be worth, 200 points, right? So we just add those points up. We have over here, and then it's just a straight 90, 80, 70, 60 scale for grades. And the computer will determine what your grade is, right? So I don't even have to determine what your grade is. So you and the computer will determine what it is. Certainly, I'll help you as much as I can during office hours. We'll go over your weekly study plan and make sure you're studying the right stuff from the study guides, right, so that you can get a good grade in here. Friday, right there, huh? Yeah, that should be Thursday. Okay, so 11 p.m. every Thursday. I liked Friday, but when they switched the servers over to the district, they want to do routine maintenance on Friday night. And so maybe on Friday night, nobody will be able to log on to Blackboard. So that's why I moved it up a day. So if you really like to use Blackboard Friday night, that might be problematic just for your own study purposes. But you can try logging on. All right, you also have the schedule right here, which I won't go over. And here's a schedule for labs. These are tentative, right, schedule. So they're probably going to change during the semester, just depending on how lecture goes. Okay. All right, any questions on the syllabus? I think I stored that. So here is Blackboard. Lecture recordings, here's the link. Here's the button to the lecture recordings. That's at dr-j-ober. That will take you to this site right here. And then you just pick what lecture you want. Okay, I don't put the first week's lectures online until the second week. And that's because some students don't want to have their voice recorded and put on the internet so that anybody in the world can hear them, right? So if you object for me to record my lectures and put them online, then I need something from you in writing, and it will be confidential. You don't have to tell your other students, friends, or anything about that. And I'll just keep all the lectures confidential. And microphone is right here, and it's difficult for this microphone to pick up your voice. It really hasn't ever been an issue with anybody, but if it is, make sure you let me know, okay? You're welcome to take your own recordings. Sometimes I might forget my recorder or the battery runs down or something funny happens. So it's okay to have a backup, like maybe what you're doing. That's fine. Ask your lab instructors what they would like in lab. Okay. But generally speaking, when you're in a place like a college right here, you should never videotape or photograph anybody without their written permission. Okay, so don't photograph or videograph anybody without their written permission. You can take pictures in lab, just make sure you don't have a fellow student in the background without their written permission or the instructor, okay? Okay, anybody have any questions so far? Yes? Oh, I tell you what, let's take a look. Sure, here are weekly assignments, and there's 16 weeks in this semester, so there's gonna be 16 different categories. Okay, and they're going to open up at various times. So here's the week one. And since I logged in as an instructor, I see all the weeks, but some of them won't be enabled. So week three is enabled, week four is enabled, but on your Blackboard site, okay, so I did the first 6 weeks. Week seven, you can't see week seven, but it will automatically open up sometime before the first test so that you can stay ahead in the class. All right, but I don't want all the weeks open because it might be confusing. Okay, to see all these things opened up at the first time. Now, in week one, do you have to work and submit any assignments? Just even if you take a quick glance, just look at it for like 250 milliseconds. Just look really quick on that page. Do you see that? Is there anything you have to do for course points here and submit by deadline? Yeah, because here's the icon, right? So you do have an online quiz to take this week, and it's got to be submitted Thursday, February 14th, which is a week from Thursday. And here's the second week. Okay, and again, here's another online quiz. It's due the same day. So the first 2 weeks are on the same day. Okay, so then you would look at these as different web pages. Every weekly assignment has objectives that you want to make sure that you accomplish during that week. Okay, then we have some animation quizzes. For instance, there might be some videos to look at, and then you should answer some questions just to give you feedback to make sure that you understand material. Now, if you look at these videos right here and answer the questions, do you get any course points for that? No, because I don't see a dollar sign. It's just there for your study habits, to develop good study habits and just to reinforce information that you need. Oh, and it even says you do not need to submit this. Practice quizzes. Okay, on the internet, though, there's hundreds of questions, and I've picked a few, okay, and these are links to those locations. For a simple quiz, for week number one, I like questions 1 through 27. And then there's some multiple choice questions, maybe some more difficult questions, and true and false, there's a fill in the blank. Those are typically a little bit more difficult. And these are given to you because sometimes I will take one of these questions or a bunch of them and put them on the lecture exam. So it is good to review these, but it's even better for you to understand what the question is all about. There are too many questions here for you to memorize what the correct answer is. You have to have an understanding of the answers in order for the right answer to come to you during the exam, right? So tonight would be a good time to read the chapter and to start answering some of these questions. I also like some questions at the end of every chapter. Some of those questions are really good, so you should answer those and work with them a number of times, form a study group and quiz each other. The answers to the end of chapter questions are in the appendix at the end of the book, so you can get some feedback. You also get feedback when you submit this quiz. It will be automatically graded for you, and you'll know which questions you got right or wrong as well. So you get a lot of feedback before you take an exam in here. So you pretty much should know what kind of grade you're going to get on an exam because you've worked with that information already, right? You've been given feedback. All right, and then here is that first week quiz. You just click on these links and to get going with these quizzes. All right, so an unlimited number of times before the deadline, zero times after the deadline. Now, did I answer your question? Who had a question and did I answer it? I just kind of rambled on. I'm not sure.
Can you get another online class?
Yeah.
We use Blackboard, but you can print them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. You have to look and see. Okay. I suppose I would like for it not to be printable, but I'm not sure how it is. Okay. Okay. So who asked that question? Did I answer your question? Probably. Somebody over here answered. Yeah. Good. Okay. So I do give you the PowerPoint slides for lectures, and sometimes that's helpful because I know for me, if I'm listening to a lecture and I need to take notes, if I start taking notes and write something down on a piece of paper about what an instructor or somebody said, guess what? I'm not listening at that time to what they're saying, right? So this is kind of a nice way so that you don't miss anything that goes on in lecture. You can just embellish these PowerPoint slides. But nonetheless, a really good study technique is to rewrite your notes after the lecture is over, right? So you might want to sit down with a group of people and just recapitulate what we went over in lecture, right? So rewriting lectures is a really good study technique for most people. And if you need to listen to the lecture recording again, of course, you're able to do that. Okay, so those of you that want to add the class, that's kind of how the scheme works. Those of you that are in the class and you don't want to mess with the computer, now's a good time to drop the class. But most people find it really helpful. Okay. Okay, let me talk a little bit about some topics. Don't forget this week there is an extra credit in lab if you can draw out a flow diagram of what a response loop, all the components of a response loop is, and what positive feedback is, negative feedback that was placed right at the end of the welcome letter. And as a matter of fact, maybe I'll just show it to you. Okay, let's go to a welcome letter. That was an announcement. And let's see if it came through with the welcome letter. Oh, yeah, right here. Okay, so I want you to be able to duplicate this slide on a blank piece of paper. I want you to know all these steps in the correct order. And here it is over here in just a graphical kind of format. I want you to be able to label these different things. We're going to talk about it in lecture today. And before lab is done this week, I want you to be able to draw this out because this is a cornerstone bit of information for the whole class. I mean, the entire class, the whole semester, I mean. Not everybody in the class, but the whole semester. All right, so you should have a nice picture in your mind of this diagram. That's what we call a response loop. All right, so make sure you're prepared for that. People that are going to add today don't have this diagram, and you might not be able to do really well on that first extra credit quiz, and that's just the way it goes. Okay, there won't be a makeup for this. So study it a little bit sometimes in lab, and if you ask the lab instructor, they'll be happy to go over it, and happy to go over it again, and again, and again, right? So you have 3 hours to be able to draw that out. Okay, so let's start talking about this stuff. Let's see what kind of slides I have. Okay, maybe you've gone over some of this stuff already. I'm gonna put this on this kind of mode right here. Usually I don't need two projectors. Okay, so for sure you should know the difference between physiology and anatomy. That's not on this slide, but that's sort of a prerequisite. What is anatomy the study of? It's a study of structure, of how things are put together. What are the pieces that make something up, and how do they relate to each other? Okay, what is the size of an object? What's the shape of an object? And what object is it next to, and what is the shape of that object? Okay, and that is a prerequisite for understanding physiology. For instance, if you want to know how to drive a car, you should know something about what a steering wheel is, right, or what a brake pedal is. So we always start with anatomy first, and then once we know how things are put together, we can see how they interrelate, right, how they function together, and that is the study of physiology. So physiology is the study of function within the human body. We're not going to talk about cars too much in here because this is a human physiology class, but we'll talk about it, I suppose, a little bit. Okay, I have to turn my cursor on so it doesn't keep disappearing. Okay, so most times, fortunately for us, our body is working properly, you're in a healthy state, but every once in a while, you leave that healthy state and go into a disease state, and we want to find out what processes are happening to put you in a disease state, and that's the study of pathophysiology. Right, so we're going to study physiology, but some inappropriate physiology that's taking place in your body that's producing a disease state. Okay, so be familiar with those things. Okay, scientific method. We don't go into a whole lot of scientific method, but you should know a little bit about it, and I'll tell you why in just a second. Okay, scientific method, as you can see, has a number of different steps. On this slide, I have 4 steps. And depending on how you think about the scientific method, some books might even have 5 or 6 or 7 steps that you have to go through. Okay, so it's kind of complicated and it's very rigorous. So your question would be, well, why does anybody use a scientific method for anything if it's a pain to use? All right, let's find out why. So the first step is to form a hypothesis, right? But it has to be a testable hypothesis. And a hypothesis is a guess about how something works in the real world, okay? And just by your everyday experience, you might come up with some rationale like say, traffic on the freeways isn't so bad around Christmas time, but traffic on the freeways around February 1st or 4th gets kind of heavy, right? And you'll say, I have an hypothesis. I bet that's because people aren't going to work on Christmas and students aren't going to class on Christmas, so there's not a lot of traffic on freeways. Okay, so that's a testable hypothesis. You could measure the traffic, you could poll people and find out why they're doing what on Christmas and on, like for instance, today. All right, so that's a testable hypothesis. So a best way to think of a hypothesis is that it's a guess. All right, but it's based on some feeling or some information that you have, but it's still a guess. All right, then you conduct and analyze those experiments to test the hypothesis, to see if those results support the hypothesis or not. And then you can draw conclusions about whether or not the results support the hypothesis. All right, and then after many experiments and after many people repeat these experiments, then a theory can be developed. Right, as long as all of the results support the hypothesis, then you can come up with a theory. And a theory is just a general statement about explaining something about the natural world based on a proven hypothesis. And a lot of times in everyday language, we use that inappropriately. You might be walking down the sidewalk and one of your friends, or you might say, hey, I got a theory about something. You know, this, that, and the other thing. If we get to the pool hall by 4:30, we got a table, but if we show up at 9 o'clock in the evening, we got to wait an hour. Okay, you might say, well, that's a theory. Well, that's not really a theory. What is that? That's just a guess, right? Based on some previous experience that you have, right? So a hypothesis is not worth very much, but a theory is. Come on, cursor, where did you go? Anybody see my cursor? Yeah, I saw it for a second. Okay, so a theory is a statement that you can count on. It gives you reliable information. And so that's why people employ the scientific method, to get at the truth of something, some information that you can rely on. So there's a huge difference between a hypothesis and a theory, and usually in everyday common language, when we mean a guess about something, we just say theory because it's too hard to say hypothesis. right? Fast, okay. So that's the big deal. When you test a hypothesis, usually we have two groups. We have an experimental group and we have control groups to understand what is happening. Because anytime we perform some kind of measurement on something or some kind of treatment, we influence what is happening in that individual, and just by giving somebody a drink of water, okay, might influence how their physiology changes, depending on whether you have a smile on your face or a frown on your face, or if you shove the glass of water at them or give it to them nice and gently, that can influence the results. So these two groups are set up so that the control group gets exactly everything in the experiment as the experimental group does, okay, but minus the active ingredient. Right, so they'll be given a placebo, but they'll be given a pill, for instance, with exact same shape, exact same color, and in the same manner that the experimental group does. And then we can compare the results of those two groups. I'm really bothered that, oh, I saw it. Ah, here it is, okay. Okay, so control group is not the experimental. Control just gets a placebo, for instance. And when we test a hypothesis, we like to have quantitative measurements, right? So we like to measure temperature with a thermometer, right? Not just with our fingertip and say warm, cold, or take a guess. Or we can measure pH with a pH meter, but we like some quantitative information, some numbers, which means that it can be repeated again if somebody has that exact same kind of instrumentation. And of course, when you ever publish something and you use a pH meter for your experiment, you have to tell everybody who made that pH meter, okay, and what kind it was, what kind of probes you're working with, so that if there's a discrepancy between different labs doing the same work, you might be able to trace it down and say, oh, well, just the pH meter was different, or the thermometer was different. So, right, so you have to be very careful and spend a lot of energy just recording everything that you're doing. So scientific method is kind of painful when you do that. And then we analyze these numbers using statistics to find out if there are significant differences between the experimental group and the control group, right? And the importance of using statistics is, again, it takes bias, human bias, out of analysis of the experiments that you're doing. Okay, there's another thing that takes bias out of an experiment, and this thing right here, we said quantitative measurements perform blindly. So somebody's going to monitor or measure what's happening. Okay, and what we mean by blindly is that somebody that is recording the results shouldn't know what the treatment groups are, because they could influence what their observations are, even though it's a number on a pH meter. Okay, they could influence the data that they're collecting, or if they're giving something, if they're giving a treatment to an individual, okay, if they know what they're giving the individual, then they can influence the results of the experiment, right? So if I know I'm giving you a placebo, I might not be very excited about what the results are going to be, because I know they should be nothing. But if I developed a fancy new drug to cure cancer, all cancer, when I give that treatment to somebody, how would I naturally feel? Really excited, right? And that patient is going to be able to read that, right? So who's ever performing the experiments should do them blindly, so you don't know what's up. Okay, so what's the purpose? Going through all these different kinds of things and problems, what's the purpose of the scientific method? We said it's to come up with a theory. This is one step, but what does a theory mean? It's just something that you can rely on, right? There's a lot of evidence, a lot of scientific evidence, which says that you can count on that information, at least under the circumstances that it was collected on. Okay, so the reason why I mentioned scientific method, because you have a nice fancy textbook, you bought that, and you're gonna read through it, and you'll be listening to my lectures, and you'll hear some things and you'll say, well, that can't possibly be true. Where did he get that information? Or where did this book get this weird information? Because physiology, okay, is gonna be a departure from your normal way of thinking. And everything that is in your textbook is at the level of theory. Okay, so that's information that you can count on. What I talk about in lecture will be at the level of theory as well. Even though it sounds really strange to you, okay, it has been proven, okay, by the scientific method, which is this long, deliberate process. If I ever talk about a hypothesis, and I like to do that sometimes, what is my guess about something, then I'll tell you for sure that this is a guess. Okay, and then you can say, oh, well, yeah, I've kind of experienced that too, or no, that's not what I thought of, right? But it's not a theory. If I tell you, it's just a guess that I have about something. But your book is written precisely as a result of a lot of scientific experiments, so it's a theory. So it's stuff that you should definitely know and take home with you. I lost my cursor again. Okay, got it back. Okay, so that's enough for scientific method. All right, we're going to now start talking about some things in physiology. And the first term that we're going to look at is homeostasis. Okay, and homeostasis just means how things stay the same. And one way to think of this is if we were to take your temperature right now, and the room is kind of cool, and then take your temperature later this afternoon, and then take your temperature tonight, and then tomorrow morning, what could you tell me about your body temperature? Okay, it's going to be about 98.6. Might go up a little bit, might go down a little bit, but not very much. It's going to vary within a very normal, very little range. Okay, and if it goes above that normal range, then you're in a disease state. If it goes below that normal range, again, you're in a disease state. You're either hyperthermic or hypothermic. So homeostasis is a concept where we think of a number of physiologic parameters. Temperature is just one parameter. So it stays relatively the same, not absolutely constant. It can change only a little bit. So here's a good working definition of homeostasis: condition in which blood pressure, temperature, just talked about temperature, fluids are very important, pH, we're going to talk about pH, and all the other factors or parameters of your internal environment are maintained within a range of values suitable to support life. Okay, if you get too cold, then that will be fatal. If you get too hot, that will be fatal as well. All right, so, but it's not a constant state, it's a dynamic state, where all the body systems are working and constantly adjusting to the changing internal environment and external conditions. So for instance, if you're at 98.6 and then you start to exercise, and what is your body going to do? Your body's going to recognize what's happening to your temperature when you start to exercise. It's starting to rise, right? It's starting to become pathological. All right, so your body's going to compensate for that. Something else has to change. So there's something that was constant, but now it's going to change to bring your temperature back down. Does anybody have an idea what might be changing as your body temperature goes up, all right, to bring your temperature back down? So there's an important physiologic parameter. Oops, physiologic parameter. Oh, I want to just highlight that. You're going to start perspiring, right? And so that's going to bring your temperature down, but what does that do to your water balance and salt balance, electrolyte balance? Right? It's going to change. So something else in your body has to change then to compensate for water loss, like you're going to be thirsty or urine production is going to be cut back. Right? So we're going to look at all those things. So think of homeostasis as, I like to think of it as a dance. All these different physiological parameters are not constant, but they're all kind of dancing around each other so that none of these parameters has to vary in a large way. Right? And if they vary over just a short distance or a small amount, then that's suitable to support life in that individual. And it's the job of medicine to get sick individuals back into homeostasis so that their own body can take care of itself. So that's a really important process. All right, and in order, for instance, your sweat glands to know to secrete sweat when you're overheating, then there has to be some kind of control over these sweat glands. And one way of doing that is by using signaling molecules in your body. So there might be temperature receptors that can send signals to sweat glands to turn them on or turn them off. And let's look at some of these long-range reflexes, define some of these things. So in this first case here, we have a cell. And it produces a product. It could be a protein, could be even some kind of lipid molecule. It secretes it from the cell, outside the cell, and it has to be picked up by this blood vessel. So this hormone, right, does not affect any cells within the neighborhood right here, but it catches a ride in this blood vessel. And once it is in the blood vessel, where does it go? Everywhere in the body, right? So the blood distributes this signaling molecule everywhere in the body, and it can leave the blood vessel again, at a distant location, and it can affect the physiology of a target cell. All right, let's review a couple of concepts. What kind of blood vessel can this hormone enter the cardiovascular system in? This is a blast from the past, namely anatomy. Okay. What kind of blood vessel allows for exchange? There's only one kind. There's some subdivisions, but what about an artery? Arteries are way too thick. Way too much connective tissue, way too much smooth muscle. Okay. Diffusion, this hormone is going to enter this blood vessel only by diffusion. Diffusion works only over short distances. And veins, the wall of a vein is way too thick and complicated to allow for diffusion. All right, so what's another kind of blood vessel? I'm sure you all know this. That is a capillary. That's right, so capillaries are built, right, and they're specialized for exchange because they just have what? Just a simple squamous epithelium, and some capillaries even have a lot of holes in them. They're even more leaky, right? So this hormone can enter the blood only at a capillary, and so it's in the blood, and now it goes to this distant location. How does that hormone get out of the blood? Name a blood vessel where it leaves. Only capillaries allow for exchange. So this hormone can never leave once it's in an artery, can never leave when it's in a vein, can only leave through a capillary because the wall of a capillary is very thin. It allows for diffusion. Okay? All right, so a capillary absorbs the hormone, and this hormone diffuses out to these target cells, and this hormone is not going to affect every cell in your body. It's only going to affect a certain select group of them. And this target cell is a target cell because it has a receptor to this particular hormone. Okay, so if this hormone looks like a hand, has the shape of a hand, guess what the receptor on this target cell looks like? It's got to be the shape of a hand so that that hormone can bind to it. So it's got to bind to that receptor, which then changes the physiology inside the cell. So if this hormone looked like a fist and the receptor was a hand, then that hormone can't affect that cell because the receptor does not have the right shape, right? And you know how important shape is. The shape of something determines what? The shape of something determines its function. Yeah, so the structure determines function. And if we change the structure of something, guess what happens? The function changes as well. So we're going to review that concept over and over again. That's a really important concept. Okay, so what we call this is an endocrine system. So this a hormone secreting gland. This is an endocrine gland because an endocrine gland secretes a substance that goes directly into the blood, carried to a distant target cell where it produces some, it elicits a response from this target cell. That's what a hormone is and what the endocrine system does. Okay, we have another kind of signaling molecule. Here we have a nerve cell. Anybody remember what kind of nerve cell this is? Probably you do. Just can't remember. Nice multipolar neuron, right? Because of these short dendrites right here, one long axon coming out. All right, so here is a nerve impulse. We're going to look and see how it's developed, how it's transmitted in this class. That might be the most fun part of the class, is to know how these neurons work. And when an electrical signal reaches this terminal end of a neuron, it's going to release a chemical, which then will diffuse through some space, and it's going to change the physiology of another neuron or another cell that is very close to it, right? Because this neurotransmitter is going to move by diffusion, and diffusion happens only under very short distances. And this chemical that is secreted by this nerve cell is what we call a neurotransmitter. So neuro comes from neuron, and transmitter means that it's transmitting information. It's not an electrical signal that jumps across, okay, stimulating the cell. It is a neurotransmitter. And a neurotransmitter can affect another neuron or an effector cell only if what? Only if this other neuron, the second neuron, has a receptor for it. Right? And that receptor has to match up, has to be complementary in shape to the shape of that neurotransmitter. And we're going to look at all kinds of different neurotransmitters in here. All right, so we got a hormone that's transmitted by the blood. We have a neurotransmitter secreted by this nerve cell, which then diffuses to a target cell. Doesn't need a cardiovascular system. Okay, and that information is transferred very rapidly down this axon of this neuron. And we got some other schemes here too. Here we have a nerve cell. And when it is stimulated and an electrical signal reaches its terminus right here, it secretes a product. Okay, and so typically, what do we know the name of a product is that a neuron secretes? What have you learned so far? you're going to say, oh, well, that's a neurotransmitter, okay, because it's being secreted by a neuron. But let's look at this diagram a little bit further. That substance, okay, then gets picked up by the cardiovascular system. It diffuses through a capillary, gets into the blood vessel, goes to a distant site where it can diffuse out of the blood through another capillary, okay, to this target cell, and can change the physiology of this target cell if it has the right kind of receptor for it. Well, what does that sound like? If you have a signaling molecule that gets transported by the blood, like this over here, then it kind of sounds like a hormone. So what is this thing here? It's got attributes of being a neurotransmitter and attributes of being a hormone. It's got both, right? So we have to call this a neurohormone. And we're going to look at some of those in this class as well. Okay, so they got different names. And as a matter of fact, in a lot of classes, anatomy classes and physiology classes, we don't break it down purely systematically by studying the endocrine system and then studying the nervous system. You study them together because there are very important places in your body where they are integrated together, right? And this is just one example of a neuron secreting a neurohormone. Okay, but in this class, we're going to study them independent and separately from each other. But I'll mention some of those locations. You would have to write them down. Okay, so these long-range reflexes, that is what we're looking at right here, hormones, neurotransmitters, neurohormones, but there's also some short-range control. And again, we're going to have a cell producing some kind of product, could be a protein, maybe a lipid molecule, and when the right circumstances occur, it's going to want to send a signal to another cell, and it's going to release an agent into the extracellular space, and it will move by diffusion to this target cell, and it's going to change the physiology of this target cell somehow by binding to a receptor. All right, if it's not being transmitted by a neuron and it's not getting into the blood, then we call that a paracrine agent. That's just a signaling molecule that operates in this very simple method. Okay, it's not a hormone because this agent doesn't enter the blood, and the information is not transmitted via an electrical signal through a neuron, which means that that signal is being transmitted over a long distance. This agent only works over very short distances, and therefore we call it a paracrine agent. Can't be a hormone because it doesn't go into the blood. Okay, that's the big reason why. But it has some attributes of being like a hormone, namely that the target tissue is a target tissue only if what? It has a receptor, has to have the right complementary shape. Okay, here is just another little different scheme of how your body exacts control or communicates. And here we have a little local cell, and it secretes a signaling molecule, and it doesn't diffuse to another cell, but it actually binds to a receptor on the membrane of the cell that secretes it. And then that's going to change the physiology of the cell. Sounds kind of strange, but it works that way. It's a paracrine agent, but since it affects the cell that secretes it, we call it an autocrine agent. All right, so these are just some basic things, and this is all what? Short-range control. Okay, so all of these things will help maintain homeostasis, which is what we're trying to talk about. All right, so homeostasis is the maintenance of what we call dynamic constancy. Things are changing, but just not very much. Sometimes people will say dynamic equilibrium. Equilibrium kind of connotates nothing's changing, okay? But dynamic means some things are changing, so this is kind of a mealy-mouthed way of talking about this concept, right? Because they're opposite concepts put together, but you just have to remember, in homeostasis, your body is not constant. Your temperature is changing, your water concentration is changing, pH is changing, and all these systems are just compensating so that nothing changes in a big way. And homeostasis is maintained by negative feedback loops. And in this particular example, I think we're looking, well, we could name a number of different things like pH or temperature, but let's just think about temperature. We're going to measure temperature in somebody. All right, so here we have somebody with a little bit below normal temperature. And maybe they start to walk up a flight of stairs, their temperature increases, all right, and then their brain realizes, oh, well, your body temperature is getting too hot, you start perspiring, and then what happens to your body temperature? It goes back down. And then your brain is going to realize you're getting too cold, you're going to stop sweating, right, and what happens to your body temperature? it goes back up, right? So all day long, it's going up, it's going down. And the important thing for you to understand and just appreciate really simply is that this line, okay, once it moves away from this average value right here, here's an average value. Once it moves away from an average value, it returns to it. Whether it is above the average value or below, you can see it returning to the average value. Right, and that's when negative, that means that negative feedback is occurring when this parameter returns to this average value. And that average value is so important, we call that the set point. All right, so in control system theory, you call that the set point. That's just an average. You'll have to do some calculations for your homework at the end of the chapter, maybe even on a test or something. Ah, I forgot to mention that. You will need a calculator for exams, a basic scientific non-graphing calculator. Okay, your cell phone, smartphone won't work because you could Google stuff, right? So you have to have a calculator, and just like on a test, you can't share Scantrons. On a test, you can't share pencils, erasers, or calculators either, right? So just a basic scientific non-graphing calculator so that you could calculate, for instance, the set point of a number of numbers. Unless you can do that in your mind. Some of you students can just do this automatically in your mind. I would like a calculator, right? Okay, I see a minus sign right here. That minus sign means that the body is going to produce a response that subtracts from the stimulus. So if the body temperature is increasing, your body is going to do something to subtract, right? An increase in body temperature is going to try to cool you down so that it returns back to the set point. That's why we have a little negative number right here. Okay, so we see the set point, and we see that body temperature never varies in a normal individual above this dotted line or below this dotted line right here. So this is what we call the normal range. If somebody's in this normal range, maybe they're, 98.1 degrees body temperature? That's within the normal range of body temperature. Okay, so they're not in a disease state. All right, so memorize set point, normal range, and if you see parameters going back down toward the set point repeatedly, then you know there's negative feedback taking place. Here's a diagram that's in your book. Okay, so I want you to know what some of the components of a response loop is, or negative feedback loop is. And this is, you're kind of familiar with this already because you've learned something about reflex arcs in anatomy. Right, you know the components, like you need a stimulus and then a receptor, and then you need an afferent nerve to bring that signal into the central nervous system, like spinal cord. Your spinal cord makes a decision on what to do, and it sends that information out. The efferent neuron. What's another name for efferent neuron? Okay, I'm thinking along those lines, but efferent means it's going from the central nervous system to the periphery, and that's what we call motor. Right, afferent is from the periphery to the central nervous system, so you could say sensory or afferent, motor or efferent, and I might use these terms in the same sentence. Right, so be familiar with those. I mispronounce afferent and efferent a little bit. You might not want to say that in your daily life, but I say it like that so you understand really clearly one has an E, one has an A. Right, so you want to say efferent and afferent, but if I say it real fast, you might miss it. Right, so I say afferent and efferent, just to be clear. All right, so in order for your body to appreciate something in the environment, for instance, light, what does your body have to have? Say if we turn the lights off in this room, turn them on, how are you going to appreciate that modality of energy that's hitting your body? What do you need? Yeah, you need eyes, and the scientific understanding of eyes for sure is what? It's a receptor. You need a receptor for that particular modality of energy. And if you don't have the receptor, then you're going to be blind to it, right? So if you don't have eyes, then you're going to be blind to light. If you don't have thermal receptors in your body is going to be blind to temperature and won't be able to maintain body temperature or regulate it. Okay, so you have a sensor. A sensor detects the value of some physiologic parameter. So let's start over here. All right, so here is something that changes the parameter, makes you get hotter, right? So this is going to affect the sensor. So this thing right here is what we call the stimulus. A response loop always starts with a stimulus, and maybe you kind of know the corollary to that. It always ends with a what? Even a reflex arc that you studied in anatomy. Starts with a stimulus and ends in a response. So let's see how that fits into this flow diagram, a little bit more conceptual compared to your anatomy diagram. All right, so here we have a change in some parameter, which is a stimulus. It's picked up by a sensor. You have to have a sensor for it. The sensor then sends that information into, for instance, the central nervous system, maybe like the spinal cord or brain. And this arrow right here, how would you label this arrow? This is, how about afferent or efferent? I'll give you a choice. Afferent, yeah, it's a sensory going from the periphery into the central nervous system. The central nervous system has an integrating center. It compares the information from the sensor right here with what the absolute average value should be. And what do we call that absolute average value? That's a set point. That's a really key word to know, set point. So the integration center has the set point, and okay, the central nervous system is smart enough to know what's the difference between the sensor information and what the set point is. And if the information is exactly the same, if the sensor is telling the central nervous system that you're at 98.6 degrees and the central nervous system thinks you should be at 98.6 degrees because that's the set point, what is the central nervous system going to do? It's just going to sit there and smile and say, everything's fine, right? It doesn't have to make a decision because there's no error in your body to correct. But for instance, if now you're at 104 degrees, there's a difference between your body temperature and the set point, and our brains are smart enough to know that there is a difference, and it will make a decision on what to do. So this integration center has a set point, and it can compare that set point with information from the sensor and make a decision on what to do. And it sends its decision out to the body. So here's another neuron sending that decision out. Okay, and what do we call this neuron right here? This is the efferent neuron. Efferent neuron carries the decision made by the integration center to something that's going to affect your body. And we call that an effector. Right? And so, for instance, this could be a sweat gland. So the sweat gland is going to be stimulated. It's going to produce, secretes water on your skin. When that water evaporates, it's going to cool your body down. So what's the effect on that initial stimulus? Okay, will you continue to heat up or will you start to cool down? You will start to cool down. And notice that these arrows are in opposite directions. And that's what we mean by a negative feedback loop. So this response right here actually subtracts from the stimulus. That's what negative feedback means. Okay, so negative feedback is what? A good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing, even though we call it negative feedback. We call it negative because of this diagram. All right. That doesn't happen in all circumstances. Sometimes this response adds to the stimulus, which then drives that system farther and farther and farther away from the set point. Most of the time that produces a disease state. Right? For instance, if this is body temperature right here, your body temperature starts to rise, but this feedback loop is not working properly. So instead of returning back down to the set point, your body temperature increases. And when it increases, then that's a stimulus to make that response loop work again. Then your body gets hotter. Response loop works again. Your body gets hotter still. It gets hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. And eventually you just explode in a ball of flames. Okay. Spontaneous human combustion. Okay. I've never really seen a theory on that. That's just my silly hypothesis, right? But nonetheless, your body temperature, if positive feedback is taking place, will increase, increase, increase to a certain point that you can't maintain your life, right? You can die of hyperthermia or hypothermia as well. Okay, so here is just a diagram that shows maybe body temperature, okay, below normal, because here's the set point, right smack in the middle, and this body temperature is going up to the set point, and when it goes overshoots the set point, it goes back down to the set point. So what kind of feedback is happening here? Anytime you see a parameter retreating back to the set point, what kind of feedback is taking place? Negative feedback. Okay. So question here is X constant over time? It's not. It's going up, it's going down. But is homeostasis being maintained? Yes, because X doesn't change above this normal range right here. Okay, so those are really important concepts. Here's another way of looking at it that I like a lot. I don't know if this is in your textbook. Probably not. I think I just gave it to you. So here's a flow diagram of what we looked at. Well, how is homeostasis maintained? It's maintained through the working of response loops. So you should know the components of a response loop. And how does a response loop always start? It starts with a, here you go, stimulus right here. Your body will be blind to it unless it has a sensor or a receptor. That receptor sends information into an integration center via an afferent pathway. Maybe we'll have to know the names of some nerves. I think in the first lab, I give you the names of some nerves, like the vagus nerve and hypoglossal nerve. Okay, our afferent pathways, bringing signals into the brain. And here's the integration center. What does the integration center have? This is bad. I left it off this slide. I didn't mean to leave it off this slide. What does an integration system have or integration center have? And make sure you write this in your notes. What does it have? What resides there? Yeah, the set point. Right. Okay, and then the integration center then compares, so it analyzes signal, compares it to the set point, makes a decision on what to do, sends it out an efferent neuron to an effector, and what does an effector always do? Produces a response. So what would a response, let's just say we have an effector that's a muscle, okay, and we stimulate that muscle, the muscle is an effector, what kind of response is that effector going to produce if it's a muscle? Contraction, because that's what it's specialized for. And as a byproduct, it produces heat. Okay, so an effector does something, okay, in the somatic nervous system. What is the effector? There's only one. We're talking about voluntary control in your somatic nervous system. There's only one thing that you have voluntary control in your whole body. It is really freaky. There's only one thing that you can control with your mind. And what's that? Skeletal muscle. You can cause it to contract, you can cause it to relax. That's the only thing that you can willfully control. That's the somatic system, right? Because it's under voluntary control. Everything else is under autonomic control. Okay, so somatic versus autonomic in this particular sense. What are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system? What are they? Cardiac muscle, I like that. Cardiac muscle is one. Smooth muscle is one. And glands. Okay, so those are the only three effectors. Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. Three effector organs. And for the somatic nervous system, how many effector organs are there? Just one, skeletal muscle. Okay, so that's a nice way to compare and contrast the autonomic and the somatic nervous systems. All right, so this is your diagram for lab. Make sure you can draw these things, but this response right here just doesn't sit there and do nothing. What does it do? It's either going to add to the stimulus or subtract from the stimulus. If it subtracts from the stimulus, then the stimulus is going to be driven down to the set point. If it adds to it, it's going to cause that parameter to move farther away from the set point. Right, if it subtracts, then of course it's negative feedback. If it adds, it's positive feedback. And 99.9% of the time, positive feedback is a pathological state. But we're going to look at some really interesting positive feedback mechanisms that do happen in people. This arrow right here, probably I would have liked to have drawn another arrow right here. This really should be a bracket that says that this whole thing is a response loop. But this dotted line, I like an arrow right here because that kind of implies that this response is going someplace and doing something, and it does. It either adds or subtracts to the stimulus. Okay, so in lab, make sure you can list these different things. This is sort of like mitosis, right? You had to know the phases of mitosis and some things that are going on there. Okay, response loop always begins with a stimulus, ends with a response, and that's where we're going to stop. And don't forget, there is a sign-in sheet going around someplace. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet because that is the only way that I know that you're here. And if I drop you for being absent in class, you can always go to the sign-in sheet and say, well, I was in class because I signed right here. And then I have to get you back in the class. That's your receipt for being here. Same thing for lab. Yes, that's the book. Yep.
It was my mistake not to read the syllabus completely.
Yeah.
I left it at home.
Yeah.
I have the lab manual with me.